Jean.
Hey, it's me. This guy from L.A., Barry Egan. He's calling on the other line. He's saying all this stuff. He wants to talk to his supervisor or whatever.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
I put him through.
No. This is bad. Something
shut
must
up.
Have happened.
Will you shut up?
Okay, sexy. I'm going to connect you with my supervisor now.
You're in trouble, honey.
Who's this?
Hello, sir. My name's Barry Egan. I called your service the other night.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, what's that?
I said calm down and shut the fuck up. What's the problem?
The problem is, if you give me a chance to explain, one of your employees, that girl who I was just speaking with, has been threatening me, and four blonde gentlemen just attacked me and smashed my car and hurt my girl.
All right, go fuck yourself. That shit has nothing to do with me. All right, I run a legitimate business here.
Listen to me. What's your name, sir? Answer me!
What's your name, asshole?
I'm Barry Egan!
How do I know? You could be anybody,
you're a bad person. You have no right taking people's confidence in your service. You understand me, sir?
You're sick.
No. Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
You have no right to take people's confidence.
Shut up! Will you shut up? Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! Now! Are you threatening me, Dick?
Why don't you... You go fuck yourself!
Oi.
Fuck! Did you just say, go fuck myself?
Yes, I did.
That wasn't good! You're dead!
All right, so hi and welcome. This is the Unnamed Movie Podcast. We are officially 2 hours late. That is probably the usual, actually. Damien has...
Yes? Quick question.
Yes.
We record this and put it out live, right?
No, we don't. But I like to let the people know.
You're being questioned. So since we're not putting it out live, you telling them that we're 2 hours late means...
I like to let them know how delinquent a certain member of our...
It's all my fault.
Fraternity.
All my fault. I'm a horrible person, guys.
Look, I'm going to tell you and Andrew something right now. The podcast starts at 7. And they will always... I don't know why you people send different times in the email. I don't really care, to be frank. I'm going to be here at 7. Most times. That's just...
Let's just get
not
that out of the
of this
okay, so, alright, fair enough. So,
this game that you two are playing, calling me and telling me that I'm late when I know the podcast starts at 7. I don't know what game you two are trying to play.
You see what I love most about it is, number one, it's completely not my fault. I was fighting Douglas on the early start because I'm like, it takes me a while to get home from work, right? And I'm like, okay, I can make it if I rush. And I even coaxed my coworker into dropping me home from work so that I got home relatively earlier than normal. And I'm like, yes, I'm here. I can do the podcast. And Douglas was fighting so hard for the 5 o'clock start.
All right. So
and
Douglas,
I'm just wondering what we have ruined right now.
Say I had work the night before. It would mean that I'd reach home 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to eat,
mm-hmm.
watch some movie.
Wait, hold on. You'd have to watch some movie?
Yes. I'd have to eat and
generally, you'd have to watch The Untouchables, a documentary.
Right. I don't simply pass out the second I eat. It doesn't work like that. So say I'm finished eating 10 o'clock. Let's be ridiculously generous. Finish eating and watching a movie at 10 o'clock. Then I'd have to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And wake up.
Yeah.
And for our listeners, he's talking 10 a.m.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Then I'd have to wake up and then leave and get here.
So you can leave by 4 o'clock.
Right. So I'd have to wake up 4 o'clock.
Yeah. So that is...
Not bathe.
That's 6 hours. That's 6 hours of sleep, my friend. What's your problem?
Okay.
I get 6 hours of sleep.
No, that
most
explains
nights.
A lot.
Actually, there are some nights where I get much less.
That is sad. I get a lot of sleep. I require a lot of sleep. This machine is, you know, high maintenance.
It is a temple.
Right. I don't know about that. High maintenance.
Okay, so, I don't give a fuck about high maintenance or low maintenance. And secondly, I think we have to talk about what we watch today.
Do we?
And
do we have
to? Yes, we do. And so I will actually start, because seeing as I am no longer Corporate Douglas, I actually have a list of things that I have seen this week.
A sad list.
And I'm going to start with the not so sad. I know that our fearless leader has for a long time been a fan of this television show. And for a long time, I mean a long time.
You mean Supreme Overlord Andrew Robinson?
Supreme Overlord, yes. That one. And so I finally decided, you know what, it's time for me to take the plunge and see if this show makes sense, because the truth of the matter is I like a lot of things done by the same people. So I watched Alias.
Hold on. Yes. Stop right there.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, Alias is a load of fucking garbage.
What?
let me get the story.
History thing I'm hearing now. J.J. Abrams Alias.
Let's get this story straight before Douglas goes any further as to my relationship with Alias.
All right. Right.
Okay. Let's hear it.
You just started watching, so maybe you'll know the exact year. But can you tell me what year Alias started airing?
I think it was like 08, but no.
No, that's 90s. That's 90s. I'm just checking which 90s.
I don't know when it was.
Okay, I know I was still in high school, right? And my father was a huge fan of the show, and what he was a bigger fan of was generally having, you know, family time, and Alias was one of those Sunday shows which he enjoyed to watch, and I allowed myself to watch it with him on a weekly basis. And as the show went on, I slowly but surely hated the show more and more. And it's partly because the show is a load of garbage. And it's partly because I got thoroughly annoyed watching television shows with my father.
And you hate your father, aren't you? I see where this is going.
And I slowly but surely inched my way out of that, it's Alias time kind of announcement in the house on a Sunday. I don't know how Douglas didn't get coaxed into this. I guess it was because this was... Were you at Ithaca at this point?
At least for most of it, yes.
Yeah. But, Lord, Douglas, please don't slander me with such things as Alias love. You may now continue.
Wow. Well...
So you've wasted your time.
Apparently. The first three episodes have been okay. I suppose it could get better. It could also get worse.
I mean, hold on. The only thing that I like to give that show is that it gave us Bradley Cooper. As far as I'm concerned, that's where he started.
Isn't Jennifer Garner in that show?
Yes, she is.
I like her.
She's nice, and she's nice to look at, but she's not as good as Bradley Cooper.
Are we sure we want to make such a definitive statement?
Yes, we
do. What has Bradley Cooper really
The
A-team.
He doesn't need to be in
anything else. No. If we're going to talk about straight acting chops.
Wait, straight acting chops? Yeah. I don't think either of them can really
And that is
really
my point. That's the point that I'm trying to make. You cannot go... It gave us Bradley Cooper, as if Bradley Cooper has, you know, is this fantastic actor that we love. No. He's been in a few good movies that we like a lot. Yes. He's also been in hot garbage.
Yes, he has.
So let us not give him a free pass because of, you know, A-Team and Hangover.
Okay, all right. I'm going to mount the Bradley Cooper defense.
Fine.
Right. Ooh.
First of all, I'm going to say I haven't seen this movie, but I'll say his newest film, which is coming out soon, Silver Linings Playbook. Everyone's been talking amazingness about it. But before that, Bradley Cooper, while I'm not going to throw him in the Daniel Day-Lewis and Matt Damon category. I feel that he is the charismatic actor that I enjoy to see in all of those big blockbuster movies that we love so much. And as far as I'm concerned, he is like the best version of it, because he has been able to shift from action comedy and hopefully when I say silver linings, I can agree with everyone and say this now dramatic role. Because between the A-Team, The Hangover, his cameo role in Wedding Crashers.
I love that movie.
And I'm sure there, even, what was his movie last year, which I liked a lot, and it was mainly because of
Limitless?
Him. Limitless. I like that movie a lot. Even though I admit its limitations, I think Bradley Cooper does so well in that movie, and I adore it because of him. I like him as an actor, and I look forward to what he's coming in.
So you've just defended the point that I made. You have just said that he's okay as an actor, and that is the point that I was trying to make. I wasn't saying that he's bad, but you guys are saying that, you know, it get the only thing good to come out of it is Bradley Cooper. All
right,
but I would argue that Jennifer Garner is just as good as Bradley Cooper.
So Damon,
that is the argument I'm making.
Imagine not that statement I made mm-hmm. before about Bradley Cooper, the only good thing that came out. And imagine if it was, let's say, Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, but Shia LaBeouf wasn't in that movie. What are we comparing here?
Shia LaBeouf is like the bad version of Bradley Cooper right now. He is that guy who is being pushed by all of the...
I am confused about what is going on.
Andrew, what argument are you trying to make?
I don't know what he...
And please be reminded that for some god-awful reason I'm on your side. So if I am actually confused by your
argument... You know
what,
I'm done.
And questioning it,
anymore.
That's not a good thing.
All I want you to do is go back and say... Two good things came out of Alias. Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Garner.
Okay,
is that
Damien,
so
I
hard?
Agree. Jennifer Garner was good too.
Right. Yes, let's just move on now.
I saw Bottle, even though that movie was bad.
I love Bottle.
I didn't
you are incorrect. You are incorrect. We're going to argue about that movie tonight.
Anyway, I shall clearly be the
right, so you
decider
love Alias.
Anyway, Alias is... So far, only all
moving
right.
Swiftly,
yeah. Moving swiftly along. I also started watching a TV show that I did watch before and despised. And now, in its, I think, fifth or sixth season, people are so hardcore fans of it. And it contains so many people that I like and think are funny that I really think I should rewatch it.
Fringe?
we all know my feelings on Fringe here in this forum. This TV show is Parks and Recreation, starring Amy Poehler, who I'm not really a big fan of, but has a lot of other people. I love Aubrey Plaza, I love Aziz Ansari. He didn't start off with it, but Adam Scott is in it now and he's fantastic. Rob Lowe is in it and I kind of like him too. So I've decided that I have to at least go from Inception to a little bit into the point where, especially Adam Scott, who is one of my favorite comedians, is in. And I started to watch it, and actually, maybe my palate has matured because so far it's not that as bad as I remember it.
Okay. So it's not good yet. It's not as bad.
No, it's. I don't want to say it's not good. It's okay, and it shows potential. Yeah,
but this is, what, 4 or 5 seasons in, Douglas?
Yeah.
That is dominant with faint praise. You
I've only watched two or three episodes.
All right. So, season 4 or 5 of 30 Rock, if you picked an episode at random, it would still be a strong episode.
Yeah. Well, no. If you got any of the Queen of...
No, that was later on. That was like last
season.
Queen
okay.
of Jordan
yeah.
episode. That was last. That was like last season. But like the... And the same with Community. If you pick any random episode...
Yeah.
You, after the first season, you'd be dying of laughter.
I love that first season.
I'd even say Ben and Kate, we're not even into the second season. And if you pick
any episode, that's not the first episode for me. Oh, I was about to say, what about...
Right. So, I don't think you can say, you know, 4 or 5 seasons in, you're watching an episode of a comedy. And it's not like the narrative is the main draw of this. They're just coming up with funny scenarios. And acting on them and you still not find it funny, I don't think. Either it's not for you or it's straight up not funny.
Well, we shall see. As I said, I've watched, technically I've gone 4 episodes. I think I've slipped through 2 of them. So, okay.
I have seen very little of Parks and Rec. I saw like 2 first episodes and decided that it's not good. But it's been on long enough and I like pretty much everybody on that show. I don't have a problem with Amy Poehler. I don't know what you guys' issue with her is. But I find her funny in almost everything I see her in. And then the rest of the cast, they're people who I've seen a lot of and enjoyed. Just never really felt like going back. But now that it's 4 or 5 seasons deep, I should at least try. But I don't want... The issue that I have is I don't want what happened with the office, the US office, to happen again, where everybody says that it's, you know, one of the funniest things on TV and the audience there is so involved with the show that they cannot step back and look past what is clearly not funny about the show.
Well, no, honestly, with the office is really funny, but I will give it this. I didn't watch the first 2 seasons. Mainly because when I started watching it, it was a essentially line-for-line copy of the British version. Then I got into it in the 3rd and 4th seasons, and those were great, and it's been great since. Except the most recent season is a little weaker, I think. I guess you could argue that, you know... why can't I remember his name all of a sudden? Steve Carell has left, and so that's a big void to fill. And they've been doing a lot of changes, but you really have to change things to make it continuously work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it has gotten weak recently, but I would argue that for a long time, that show was very funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, so I can't argue with you.
Okay.
I don't know if it's funny.
Fair enough. Anyway, I have also watched
Your opinion on Parks and Rec is
it's okay so far.
It's the audio podcast.
We'll see.
Waving your hand helps nobody.
it's a watch and see kind of scenario for this one. I watched some fairly weak movies recently.
You did this to yourself. I'm prefacing this for both Andrew and the listeners. Douglas did this to himself.
And
how's that Lazy Bastard Festival going?
Oh, it's not going very
well.
It's not going very well. Yeah. So, I'm going to start off. I'm going to go in what's the word?
Descending order.
In order of disgustingness. Right? Starting with less disgusting to most disgusting. I watched this week Salmon Fishing in Yemen.
I'm sorry you said disgusting. You're going to use disgusting to describe this movie?
Not quite. This is not a disgusting movie.
Okay.
This movie is... I would not say it was good, however.
All right.
This movie is fair to average. This movie, if you don't know, stars one of my favorite actors, Ewan McGregor. I don't know why, because he's in a lot of bad movies, but I love him anyway, probably because of Trainspotting. Ewan McGregor and Emily Blunt. I'm not a big Emily Blunt fan.
I love her.
She has been in some good things,
in
but
all good movies.
I don't think
Looper.
I don't think
the good outweigh the
cleaning.
Bad. Okay. First of all, Sunshine Cleaning
is
was
awesome.
Bad.
I like Emily Blunt in everything.
You do?
And yes, that might be because I want to bang her. But that's,
I think that is
besides the point.
So Damien, you're saying Emily Blunt is just another, what's her name?
Zoe?
Girl from Two Broke Girls.
No.
What's
Dennings,
her name? Kat Dennings.
Kat Dennings, she has done nothing. Kat Dennings is not good.
No,
Emily
but my
Blunt
point is you lie to yourself.
Is in Young, no. Emily Blunt is in Young Victoria. She's in Sunshine Cleaning.
She's in Devil Wears
she's
Prada.
She's in Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, you like
that?
I forgot. You have that thing.
I think the Adjustment Bureau might be the only one that I saw.
And of course, that one's not that bad. I
like
thought
that
one was okay. Yeah. How about, let's see, let's go.
How did you Romeo like 5 Year Engagement?
I actually like that movie.
Thank you.
It was good.
Your sister was
she was in
okay.
The Wolfman. How was that?
Everybody that was in The Wolfman was a victim to The Wolfman. You can't blame anybody for being in that movie, because that movie is a travesty.
She was in The Great Buck Howard.
Haven't seen it.
Okay.
Bad movie.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. Devil Wears Prada is horrible.
Awesome. Horrible. And I love it. Love it, love it.
Oh, well, she really hasn't been in that many movies. Uh-huh.
And she hasn't been in that many bad movies.
No. I'm just skipping over ones that I don't know. But things like The Strange Case of Sherlock Holmes and Arthur Conan Doyle, I'm pretty sure is bad.
Yeah, but
things
that's
like
TV
Irresistible,
show that we've never
probably
seen.
Not good. Windchill, I don't think so. The Jane Austen Book
I've
Club.
Seen that
but
and
you see,
it's
all
okay.
of these movies I've never seen, so I can't really speak to them.
Right.
But just
but
from
the
names
ones
alone.
That we have seen, they're good movies. You might not like The Devil Wears Prada, but you're incorrect.
And The Muppets, while I like it, that uh-huh. is a bad movie.
Okay. No. Let's not go there.
let's not talk crazy.
We, us, whoever, the people that like The Muppets, like yourself and myself, Andrew, only like it. Because A, we are lying to ourselves.
Yes.
And
yes,
two,
are.
We like The Muppets. Yes. That's it.
Yep. So, I love Emily Blunt.
Am I allowed to kick Douglas off? Can I do that?
You can try. I have tried many times.
So, okay. Increasing in its order of disgustingness, we move on to The Sitter, starring...
Salmon Fish in Yemen is an okay movie about a man building a...
trying to get salmon to move over to Yemen, which
yes.
I actually... When I tell you... I thought this name was so ridiculous that when somebody asked me what the movie was about right before I watched it, I didn't really know what it was about. I knew it was a love story mm-hmm. between the two of them. I actually said, word for word, it's just a stupid name. It isn't actually about salmon fishing in Yemen.
And you're
how
incorrect.
Wrong was I?
It is
actually about salmon fishing in Yemen. And I think they do very well. They do the whole ridiculousness of it very well. Mm-hmm. But to tell you the truth, it still doesn't get there. You know, it does okay. It does all right, but never
I enjoy watching
good.
Those two on screen. And so I think that kind of outweighed.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Anything.
Fair enough.
Plus,
so,
there's
so,
a
so
lot
what
of
you're
funny
saying,
things
so,
about
so
the
what
movie.
You're saying, there is... Mm-hmm. I mean,
I was
there
ensembled.
Are, but what you're saying is you have this thing named bias.
Yeah, no, right.
Yes, okay.
Definitely was ensembled this time. I'm not going to hide it.
Well, no, this was not an ensemble. Two people does not make an ensemble.
No, there are other people in there that...
which other people?
Good.
How many people?
Pull up the...
Oh, Kwa was in there. Mm-hmm. But Emma Scott... No, Kristen Scott Thomas. But who else?
I don't know.
No, but I don't think anybody else was
fine.
In there.
Fine. Tobias. All right.
Sure. Okay. So, increasing now my level of disgustingness is... Oh, wait. I said it already. The mm-hmm. Sitter. Starring Jonah Hill.
Actually like that too.
Wow.
Actually really like that.
That
I actually really,
so
really like that movie.
That movie was bad.
And I know that.
That
I'm not going to
really
defend
bad.
That movie as a good movie. I still enjoy that movie.
It was not good. And the only good thing I can say about this movie was that I like Jonah Hill generally. But I don't like him in this
I
movie.
I like the Mexican kid. He was pretty good.
My favorite thing about that movie is that it gave me the joke of when it came out. I don't remember where I heard this. One of the podcasts I listened to went, "Can somebody stop Judd Apatow from breaking David Gordon Green?"
Yes. He directed this film. But the truth of the matter is, I think David Gordon Green was probably broken already. Hmm. From some of the comments he's made,
I
think he's already broken.
Because you guys love Apatow and Green.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I loved Pineapple Express. I probably have a bit of a bias to Apatow. I'll give you that. But Gordon Green, I loved Pineapple Express, which was his first big movie. I know he did another one that I liked before. I think it was with Zoe. Was it Zoe Deschanel that was in that one?
Yes, he did All the Real Girls.
Yes, that one, right?
And
the
one I liked even more than that, Snow Angels, I still haven't gotten around to seeing his other movie, George Washington, which people talk about highly.
Okay, so I like two of his movies. I have since seen The Sitter, which was atrocious. The Magic Movie, what was that called? With James Franco and
Your Highness.
Your Highness, thank you. That was disgusting.
That was atrocious.
His comments on the way that he directed it were disgusting.
Oh shit, I'm looking at his IMDb page. He's directing a remake to Suspiria. Oh my goodness.
How nice. So I'm not, I don't think I have that bias.
Okay.
But I'll give you Apatow. I'm totally biased in his favor. Mm-hmm. But no, this movie was disgusting. And I think the best part for me was when I got a chuckle in, it was somewhere in the beginning, when Jonah Hill was watching TV and James Franco was on the TV. And I was like, oh, it's James Franco. Not knowing how bad this movie would be. So yeah, no thank you.
Okay.
No. Damien told me not to watch this movie.
I'm pretty sure Andrew told you.
Andrew
not to
told
watch
me.
Which
not to
movie
watch
is
this?
Movie. Which movie?
And
is
the
this?
Rest of the we world.
We have now officially broken the disgustingness in the scale of disgustingness with this movie. I watched John Carter from Mars.
A small indie movie.
Virginia.
Virginia. This movie is so bad that
I would argue though that Andrew made us watch a worse movie.
Yes, he did.
I would win that argument.
Wait, we haven't got there yet because there are some movies I want all of us to discuss concurrently. Right. Forget this 1, 2, 3 foolishness. But and we'll get to those movies in that section. Right? So okay, but Virginia was a horrible movie. Some of the CG wasn't even that good, which I don't understand because you have Disney, Marvel, Pixar, and now ILM to throw the money behind.
That movie had an unlimited budget, and they used all of it. The first
Damien, do you think that John Carter was the reason that they're like, shit, we need to buy something else? Let's buy Star Wars.
No, Andrew, I don't think if Avengers didn't do what Avengers did, Disney would have killed everybody that was ever employed to John Carter. That is the only reason Disney now, because Avengers did so much, Disney's like, you know what? We're going to make sure shit like this never, we're not taking any more gambles on anything. We're buying Star Wars, we're buying Marvel, we're not, all our risk-taking days are officially over. If you come to us with an idea, and it is not guaranteed money, don't even look at us.
Douglas, what I recommend to you now that you've finally seen John Carter, is go and, maybe you might not watch the whole show, but go and watch Friday Night Lights. Mainly for the experience that I had, wherein every time you see him come on screen, your brain will just shout in your head, Virginia.
Oh wait, he's from something before. He's in that show. He's in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, that was his
big
show.
This was the show that was supposed to propel him into stardom.
I just know the coach because the coach had a career before. But okay, all right.
Yeah, the coach. He went on to be in Super 8 and stuff.
No, he was in movies before. As well. Yeah. But yes, that is what I've been watching.
What do you put in these potions?
All right, so I'll do mine quickly.
Damien, just normal. Don't quick.
I saw butter, which Andrew despises. That's because Andrew's wrong. Jennifer Garner is fantastic in this movie. She is so good. It is on. I didn't know that she was anywhere near this funny. She is crazy good in this movie. If no other reason, watch it because of her. Because her performance is just great. And this might be the only movie that I've ever seen Olivia Wilde in and not hated every second she's on the screen. She is beautiful, but she's bad at acting. And they finally found a role that she is perfect for. And the movie, let me give you some scenarios, Douglas, and you tell me whether or not you find this funny. A stripper comes to the door and is demanding money from a husband whose wife is inside. They reject giving her the money, and so she pedals away on a bicycle. Douglas is already chuckling. Andrew's laughing. There's things like that. Hugh Jackman plays a car dealer, and after Jennifer Garner comes to see him, he prays to God and thanks him for allowing Jennifer Garner to sleep with him again. Part of the prayer, he says, her vagina is even tighter than it was in high school. It's as if she hasn't used it in 20 years. That is part of the prayer to God. There is so much funny things about this movie. It is unbelievable. The movie just... remember Easy A? You know that type of feel? That is the same type of comedy that they've put in this movie. And it works.
Well, one thing that I would say for Butter is that I didn't think Easy A was all that great.
Okay.
It was... No, it was funny. It was okay. But it was like average. Not...
Have you gone back and watched that movie?
No,
You really should. You really should. The movie, I mean, Rob Corddry is probably the least funny person in the entire movie, and that takes work.
That's saying something.
You have to plan ahead in order to get that done. What was it? Racist ninjas is a line that is said. You know, the Douglas movies. It is about Butter, and it is funny, and Jennifer Garner plays the devil. She plays one of the greatest wife characters I've seen now. The movie is just, from top to bottom, it is funny. There's people who won't like the movie like Andrew, but Andrew doesn't really like comedy, so I've ignored everything he said. Kind of wholesale. But if you get a... You will watch it, but if the other people who are listening to this get a chance to watch this movie, by all means, go out of your way to get it. It is so good, so funny. I also started watching Downton Abbey because I'm sick and tired of hearing people talk about it.
So how bad is it?
It's not bad. That's really the problem. The first two episodes are really good.
Seriously?
They're really good.
But
it well, annoys
you know what
me.
You know what though? You like period things. I generally am not a fan.
Douglas, even outside of that, the writing and the characterization of these people are so strong that you can't help yourself but like it.
Shit. And it's British. God damn it. All right. I have to watch it.
I went in wanting to dislike this because usually when it... I don't like when there's this, you know, like the internet comes together and decides that this is the goodness and everyone must see it. And if you don't like it, you're wrong.
Generally, they're wrong when they say it.
Exactly. Yes. Especially when everybody is in unison and they got it right. It's really good. But, I mean, if you start watching it and you find, you know, period pieces boring, you might not like it, but I really don't see how anybody who listens to this podcast is not going to enjoy this series. The first two episodes are kind of fantastic, and I'm going to watch more of it, which is, I didn't expect any of that. I should probably tell people what it's about. Downton Abbey is a place. It is owned by these people who, they sadly did not have a son, and so when they pass, the house, the abbey itself, won't pass down in their family line because they only have daughters, and they made some agreements in the past that will prevent their daughter from getting the estate. Will be sent to a third cousin that no one knows. So the family doesn't want this to happen. But
so are
even
they
more
pretending
than
that, like the parents are still alive when they're not? Is that what's happening?
No, no,
is that
no.
what's happening?
No, that's not what happened. No,
okay, good.
Even more than that, the family is a small section of what is happening here. The bulk of the story is about the servants of this hall.
The staff.
Right, the staff. Yes. And there's a lot of them. They all have their different personalities. And, of course, there's fighting and backstabbing going on. And it is that type of movie. Everyone wants what they want. There's hierarchy even in the staff. And all the staff sit below, of course, the family who owns the house. And so everybody is eavesdropping on everybody else, and then the staff is going back and talking to not only other staff, but to the
Wait,
owners
how long
of
ago
the
is
house.
This? Is this like World War?
It's World okay. War One. Yeah, okay. It's like 1930s.
Okay. Shit. I saw a show that probably was this on TV recently. I was kind of interested.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. I also saw a movie that I've wanted to see. And I remember when the trailer came out, they did a bait and switch. They put Shia LaBeouf's face first, and then they kind of asked me to not watch this movie by putting his
the
face
grunt.
First, by having him narrate the movie. And then they just kept putting star after star.
Are you talking
after
about
star.
Lawless?
Yes.
Oh, did I and talk said, about this grunt. Movie? Because I watched this movie too. Yeah.
And
oh
said,
my goodness.
You people are not going to watch this. And
what did you think about this movie, sir?
I'll say the bad things about the movie
okay.
first.
Because there are quite a few.
First thing is they broke a cardinal rule of movies. They wasted Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman is a treasure. To everybody. He was put on earth to make movies better. That is his job. And he's never failed at that job. Even if the movies are not great, he is always great in it. You cannot waste Gary Oldman because he's fantastic. And they wasted him in this movie. He has 3 scenes. He does nothing. Absolutely nothing in the movie. And that aggravated me from start to end. Second is, you cannot have Shia LaBeouf narrate anything. His voice is not good enough. He does not have presence, right? When you hear Shia LaBeouf speak, you don't immediately want to listen to him. He cannot command a room to listen to him. He just doesn't have that type of voice. It's not there. And they have him narrate this movie, which is, I mean, it's just a waste. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. I guess they were using his star power. Don't know why. Especially when you have better actors in the movie that could have done the job. I don't see why they had him do the narration. But fine. There's also a lot of other smaller wasted characters. Mia Wachowska, she's in there. She does pretty much nothing. What's her name? The other
Amy
the waitress.
Adams, Amy, no, sorry. Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain is also wasted in this movie. The little time that you spend with her is not nearly enough, and they don't have her be. They don't utilize her properly. She's there, but she feels underused like a lot of other people.
No, most of the people in this movie were underused.
Right. And
except for Shia LaBeouf, which should not have been used. Tom Hardy, who we are all fans of.
But Tom Hardy had the most screen time of anybody in the
movie.
Yes,
of any of the supporters.
Which is why I don't know why they sold it as a Shia LaBeouf movie.
No. Shia LaBeouf had more screen time than Tom Hardy.
No.
Yes, he did.
I went back and watched this movie.
Uh-huh.
And if you count up the amount of time an actor spends on the screen, Tom Hardy spends more.
You know what it is? I guess because
it's the montages that is tricking you.
And not just that, the narration
the fact that he's narrating
kind of puts him in every scene that he's not in.
Tom Hardy is the main focus of this movie. And
he's a great character in this movie.
He and the other brother are the only great characters.
Yeah.
No, I've forgotten that our friend Guy Pearce is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's perfect. The reason I have come down on the side of liking this movie is the fact that Tom Hardy is magnificent in it, even though they should have, a wiser director would have given him more things to do with the movie. But Tom Hardy plays this menacing, you know, older brother type. He plays the protector, and he, despite the fact that he doesn't do a lot of beating up of other people in the movie, you fear him from the start of the movie right to the end of the movie. And on the opposite side, you have Guy Pearce, who plays the most slimy person you've ever seen in a movie. He plays a, you know, when you hear the term city slicker, they should just cut and paste Guy Pearce and put him there, because that is exactly what he is. Ruthless. He is just this there's a scene when there is a woman in his room.
Oh yes,
and the newspaper. And she is distraught. You don't see what happens to her, but you know
Something bad things
took place inside that room. And it is moments like that that where we go, this movie wasn't that bad. And that is why I've come down on the side of liking this movie. But I will not forgive this movie.
Yeah, it's hard
for
to say.
Wasting all of that potential. There is a far superior movie somewhere inside of the footage that they've shot.
You see, that's the thing. It's hard not to like this movie, but at the same time, it's hard to like this movie as well.
Why is Shia LaBeouf in this
movie? Oh, boy.
He is the mate. And it is even outside of my hatred of Shia LaBeouf. I watched this movie with other people, and everyone had the same major criticism that he should not have been in this movie. Either he's miscast or he's just straight up bad, but he is one of the major issues of the movie. But I still like so much about the movie, and I really shouldn't. There's things that are, I mean, wasting Gary Oldman is a crime. Like, we should call police and have people locked up for this. You can't, if you're going to get him in the movie and put his name there, the least you can do is let Gary Oldman help your movie. But having him in three scenes, why? Why have him in the movie? You couldn't find anybody else that can play gangster? 30s gangster? No one else. There's nobody else you could have gotten to be in that role. But I still like it, though. And I think people should watch it. If only there's a way to edit out. There is no way.
The Damien cut is on its way.
There's no way for me to do it, though. Because he's narrating the movie. There's a better movie there, though. I know it. I can see it. It's just not the movie that we got. The trailer was right, though. Because the trailer showed me what was going to happen. And then tempted me to not watch it. And how I feel about the trailer is how I feel about the full movie. That they dared me to not like a movie with Shia LaBeouf as the lead. And I still went in there. And they got me. They got me. Now, Douglas, you said you hated this movie, right? I'm pretty sure that's
no,
what I heard.
No, that's not what I heard.
The poster in your room says, fuck Lawless. I understand where that is. Seems a bit harsh. It's in crayon, though. Where did he get crayon?
I saw The Man with the Iron Fists.
I'm sorry. Can we do a second take on that?
All right. Here we go.
That is not the reaction I'm supposed to have.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. I saw The Man with the Iron Fists. Oh, I'm surprised. I expected something.
The reason sadly, I'm not laughing is because I saw a worse movie than that. I saw Total Recall. No one should watch it. Go ahead.
The new one?
Yes, the new one.
Oh.
It's better than the first one, but that is not saying anything at all. Jessica Biel, you know what? Man with the Iron.
So copy and paste anything you say about a bad movie and put it here. It is like
you didn't like the RZA's direction.
Is it here lies the worst part about it? Is that I almost want to be optimistic about it, because the thing is that it's obvious, and I guess we have knowledge helps this become even more obvious, that the RZA, he isn't a director by trade. It's not his career path. It's just something he happened to get the opportunity to do, I would kind of assume, based on his relations with the likes of Tarantino and Eli Roth. Why does that name sound wrong when I say it out loud?
Yes,
but yeah, that's right.
Roth.
if maybe it's because I'm thinking of Rothstein, and because I've been watching Boardwalk Empire a lot, but whatever. And you can imagine anyone who gets that opportunity who isn't professional, who isn't a professional by trade, their first attempt is always going to be through something they love, something they know so much about that they feel they can give it a chance. And you can kind of see it when you look at things like if you see Edgar Wright's really early film from when he was like a teenager. He made this movie called A Fistful of Fingers. It's all on YouTube. I think it's on a couple of his DVD sets out there for free.
Yeah, if you want to watch that movie on a, well, I don't know if it's on the Blu-ray, but I have the special edition Hot Fuzz DVD, and it's on that one.
Mm-hmm. And those movies aren't very good, but they show a sense of love that you can see. And I'm almost optimistic to the point that if he can take this as a learning exercise, I can lie to myself and go and watch his next movie.
I'm asking two questions, because I might watch this movie if you give the right answers to these two questions.
The answers are no. Whatever it is.
How awesome was Russell Crowe? How campy was he in this
movie? My favorite Russell Crowe moment was his pretty much introduction moment, where he comes into the movie and he goes into Lucy Liu's place, the whorehouse. I think it's called Pink Blossom. And he walks in and he's like, I want three women. And he picks one woman who apparently is with another gentleman. To which he goes over and he says, I'm rescuing her from you. And the man starts a fight and he pulls out his knife and cuts open his midsection. And he shouts at the top of his voice, I am Mr. Knife. I'm on vacation. Don't fuck with me. And that's about as much as I loved Russell Crowe. That moment alone.
Okay.
The rest of the movie is relatively mediocre with
how
Russell
Crowe. How much time does Russell Crowe spend on the screen?
I'd give him about 30 minutes, which is a third of the film.
Oh, wait. Nope. Never mind.
Maybe a little
Russell,
bit more.
So
but honestly,
understands the type of movie this is, and he spends a third of the time. I've watched movies for less good reasons than that. I think I'll need to go give this. I'll give this a look.
But honestly, it's not a good movie. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
You mean a movie
like,
directed by the RZA isn't great?
Not even in like kung fu movie sense, where like you've mentioned how every once in a while you get into kicker mode where you'll just watch shitty kung fu movies. Like,
sir, it's just kung fu movies. Shitty kung fu movies, redundant.
It's not even that good. I didn't even like the action in this movie that much. It's not good. Let me move on. I also watched The Campaign, which is also a shitty movie. However, I will give it one redeeming factor, and not Will Ferrell. Dylan McDermott is in this movie.
Okay.
The guy from The Practice, and Damien, recommended
this
show.
We know who
okay.
he is.
Right. Just making sure. And he appears out of nowhere, because the whole plot of this movie is that the people who basically run politics have decided that Will Ferrell has had his chance and he's done. So they are throwing money at Zach Galifianakis, and they throw him a campaign manager who is Dylan McDermott, and he just walks in with this sense of ridiculous hatred of everything around him. Like, the moment, the first line you hear from him, he kind of creeps up behind Galifianakis and goes, "I'm here to make sure you don't suck," right? And you can tell that he doesn't want to be anywhere, but he owns every moment that he is on screen, and I love it for that. He is perfect in that movie, but that's about it. Movie otherwise is a load of shit. I also saw On the Road, which is another load of shit. I've been watching bad movies. On the Road, the latest. It's a movie about a writer, a famous writer whose name I can't remember right now.
John Kerouac.
That's not the name of the character in the movie, but okay.
It's not? It's not Kerouac? I thought it was Kerouac.
It could be his book, but they changed the name of the main character who's having the adventures and such.
You people are talking about.
With Garrett Hedlund in it, the guy from Tron Legacy, and there's a bunch of other people in it. There's Viggo Mortensen, there's... who else is in this movie? There's Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, sorry, not John. Jack. Jack Kerouac. He's the one that wrote the book. Mm-hmm. The writer that you're thinking of is Sal Paradise.
Yeah. And it's basically about this guy who goes
You realize this is a movie with Kristen Stewart in it.
I wasn't going to mention that.
You're trying to trick me.
However, I will give Andrew this. Here are the people underneath her. Amy Adams, I'm gonna skip over this name. Viggo Mortensen, Steve Buscemi, I don't know who this is, but we've got Terrence Howard, who some people like.
This is one of those movies in which you have a main character just going place to place, and he meets all sorts of quote unquote interesting people, and it just becomes all of these names you're mentioning, like, oh, we see them for a scene or two, and then they're gone, kind of deal.
You mean like that movie with what's his name?
Don't you dare, because I love that
with
movie.
With the monkey driver. What's the name of that?
Into the Wild, and I fucking love that movie.
Emil Hirsch, yes.
Oh my god.
Speed Racer, that's the name of his other movie.
You see, here, let me just ignore Douglas, because he's just trying to get me into a hateful moment. And while I'm talking about shitty movies, I don't need that kind of feeling. What really makes this movie bad is the fact that there are absolutely no moments in this movie which feel like they actually matter. And the point being is that every scene that we get into where we meet another interesting character, it just becomes a waste of time having this discussion which means nothing. And even though you're like, oh, he's probably writing this down in his book, and then we get that scene at the end and it's nothing, it means nothing. There's no point to anything in this film. It's almost as bad as another movie which I call a war crime, which I won't talk about, which I made all of us watch. it's horrible. Beside the sea, why do you keep at night when the shadows? Andrew, what trailers are we watching? You sent us four. Are we talking about all four? First trailer I want to talk about is The ABCs of Death.
Damian, I think you are the best person out of all of us to talk about that trailer.
Are you sure about it?
I'm very sure.
Alright, the people who brought us, let the right one in, at least the people who distributed it here, magnets, have gone to some other country and found a strange movie, which is what they do. This is called The ABCs of Death, and the trailer looks like a fever dream by lunatics. I do not want to watch this because it looks terrible. It's 26 directors coming up with ways to kill people, and every time I see movies like this, this is what happens at the end of these movies. Whenever there's movies that are designed to shock and awe, at the end of the movie, all it does is anger and aggravate. But it does not shock anybody because it is 2012 and the human centipede came out. And so that is it. In terms of shocking people, we are at our end. It cannot be done anymore.
Speaking of the human centipede, have you been watching Key and Peele?
Not enough. I haven't reached there. I haven't seen any human centipede jokes yet. The last movie that we saw that was supposed to shock on, to shock us.
Yes, was the Kill List.
Yes, the Kill List. And at the end of the movie, we were angry, aggravated, and no one was shocked. In fact, we saw all of what they had coming at the end from a ways off. And so I don't know why Andrew thought Andrew has some external information that is not the trailer that has excited Andrew Robinson, but he hasn't shared any of that with us. And so I can only go by what I saw in that trailer, and I don't want to see anything else.
All right, let me try to pitch it to you, right? And let me see if I can change your mind, right? You've gotten the basic gist, you know, 26 different directors making 26 different films, but and you're kind of seeing it as, oh, the shock and awe, but How many times have you found yourself, and I'm pretty sure the answer is going to be none, but I'm going to ask you anyways, in front of your computer? Maybe you've gone to YouTube, maybe you've gone to one of these film sites we read, and they've linked to a YouTube video of a quick short film, 3-4 minutes long, of like just a simple idea executed relatively well. That was a question.
Zero times.
Do you think that if I were to show, if I were to link you a 3-4 minute film that you sat down and you watched and it was well executed, you would appreciate it, even if you might forget about it 5 minutes later?
Of course, Andrew.
Right. That is kind of how I view this movie, is that it's going to be a series of 3, 4, 5, I don't know how long, short films, all going one after another. And while I'm pretty sure that not all 26 are awesome or even good, if about 7 of them hit me well, I feel like I'd be happy.
Andrew, I have a TV show that you can watch that is this movie exactly. Spike TV has a show called 1001 Ways to Die. And every 15 minutes or so, they show really stupid ways, sometimes really funny ways, that people are on record to have died. I don't know if you've heard the term ghost riding the whip.
I know what that is.
So some idiot tripped and fell while ghost riding the whip, but the steering wheel was locked, and so it went in a giant circle, and then the car came back and drove over his head. And I saw that and went,
what's ghost riding the whip? First, I thought it was something sexual, and then you talked about cars. Negative. So, yeah.
It is when you go outside of the vehicle, you start driving, and then you hop out of the vehicle, and you start dancing while having one hand on the steering wheel, and have the car continue to move.
Some
people go on top of the car and start dancing while the car is in motion. And we call these people morons.
Yes.
And one of these morons got murdered as the car went in a circle. His friends, by the way, were close by, and instead of doing what friends are supposed to do, just run and go help this lunatic, they watch as the car made a giant circle and ran over his head, which is remarkable. They're all in prison, by the way. This has a happy ending. Story has a happy ending. So I saw that and I went, this is good. And then they, after that one, they went into some other one. And I went, I don't want to watch this anymore, because this is boring. Watching people come up with creative ways to murder themselves is funny, maybe once.
But you see, here lies the thing, right?
You don't want to see it anymore. This trailer, in the 30, in the 90 seconds that it aired, I went, I don't want to see any more of that. All of what they've shown me is quite enough. In fact, too much. And I'd like to move away from this one.
All right.
No, Andrew, that is how I feel.
You to me. No, I
don't want to see. Douglas Robinson, you were smiling the entire time. Why were you smiling?
I'm smiling because...
You want to see this desperately.
I do not want to see this.
Moving right along. What's the second
first of all, it also helps that it's one of the films I missed at TIFF that I heard a lot of good things about.
So I was correct. That is the external information that Andrew has that we don't. Andrew missed seeing it at TIFF, and so now he wants to make up for that. What is the second trailer that we have to talk about?
Last trailer I want to talk about is Now You See Me.
Please! Anybody can see him.
Can you explain to me how you went from Las Vegas to Paris in 3 seconds?
What do the kids call it these days? Oh, magic. First rule of magic, always be the smartest guy in the room.
Your bank was the distraction. Wow, they set up the real trick.
Douglas will go first.
Oh, will I?
Okay. Yes, you will.
Because I love magic so much. This trailer was the best of a bad bunch. We had to watch, I think there were four of them, and this was the least horrible trailer that there was.
Is
out
that
of the
four. Obelisk?
There was all sorts of foolishness. There was a Mobius strip. There was... Anyway, this movie stars a bunch of people that we know. Jesse Eisenberg, Isla Fisher,
Morgan Freeman,
Mark Ruffalo,
Mark Ruffalo,
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, right? Thank you for reminding me. So this has the star power. It has the people that we want to see, minus maybe Isla Fisher and even potentially Jesse Eisenberg and definitely Morgan Freeman. Hold on, wait a second. I'm taking out all of the people in this movie.
I don't want you to say bad things about any of the people. Leave them alone.
They're still fun.
And it's directed by one of Damien's favorite directors.
Oh, who's it directed by?
Louis Leterrier.
Louis Leterrier. Oh, wow. Okay.
So we immediately know the movie won't make sense.
Yeah.
But so, it will be pretty.
The thing about this movie is, as Damien says, it looks...
Isn't Iron Man in this movie too?
I don't know about that.
I thought I saw him, but I'm not sure.
Isn't that the guy that was probably teleported into the bank?
It probably wasn't him. It probably wasn't
him. I don't think it's him.
Can you bring up the IMDb,
please? I don't see him on IMDb.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It looked like
it. It kind of did, but I don't think so. So, this movie looks to be at least, if not good, at least entertaining.
Yes.
And
it looks like
so,
dumb fun.
Yeah. So, I might be... talked into watching this one, especially
Douglas, we're going to watch.
Yeah, especially if it is that the competition for my movie watching time is the other three trailers that we had to watch. So, with that, I will leave you.
Oh God!
So one of the most interesting things that I kind of latch on to in this film is I heard about this movie a while back, and it was mainly from listening to the podcast Penn Sunday School, the podcast by Penn Jillette, part of the duo Penn and Teller. And they were associated with this film. They were like consultants of some sort in showing close-up magic to the cast members to try and get them trained. And there's this moment in the trailer where you see Jesse Eisenberg flip off the cuffs and flick it onto Mark Ruffalo. And while I know that I'm probably wrong, I'm hoping that that is one of many close-up magic tricks that are done practically, kind of to the effect of, and it becomes kind of hokey if they focus on it too hard, kind of to the effect of the Matt Damon pickpocket from Ocean's 11, which almost no one ever saw, but if you slow down the DVD, you can see.
I saw it. I remember when I first got that DVD, or when I first watched that DVD that someone first got, because I was not buying DVDs at that time. What? Spend money? No, thank you. We actually saw it and we were like, hold on, did that actually happen? And we rewound it, and as you said, we slowed it down and we were like, you can see this guy's hand actually go into the jacket. And that was probably the best part of that movie for us because of that.
And because magic is something I've always loved from when I was a child, like Douglas can tell you, I was always in love with magic.
Are you sure you're still not a child?
I'll check and let you know.
What's the guy's name? The mind freak guy. What's his name?
Chris something.
Yeah.
Chris Angel? Is it Chris Angel?
I have no idea. I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds dumb enough to be his name. Chris Angel.
Right.
So you don't watch him? You don't watch Andrew, there's actually very large competitions every year about magic, you know. I'm pretty sure you're not watching any of those.
I like magic conceptually. Okay. I know Damon has turned off the podcast. If I'm right in that moment in the trailer is actually one of these practical moments, I'm looking forward to this movie to see more of that. The movie itself looks like it's going to be like a bad, hopefully entertaining movie.
Okay. I like the trailer a lot. The movie that it's promised is movies that I love. I like dumb action movies. And Leterrier is a connoisseur of dumb action movies. He understands that you don't have to tell a great story. You just have to entertain. And a lot of people, especially with action movies, have started to forget that. No, I won't say that Leterrier is perfect, as Douglas is going to delve into his directing now. But the trailer promises a lot of, you know, what Andrew wants, a lot of magic and things like that. It also promises a heist movie, which I like heist films. It gives you the sense. Thanks for that, Douglas.
Why does it... I forgot that it does that. Why does it need to make a noise when I turn it off?
Because you never clicked that thing before, Douglas. Right? The one that says, warn me. Uncheck that. So that it just closes. Thank you. Right. So the movie promises, you know, a lot of thrills, a lot of high flight. You see people jumping off buildings and you see glass shattering. A lot of things like that. Leterrier is not the best at, you know, telling stories, but he's always compensated for that with his action. And that is, I like that. Sometimes I just want dumb action movies with a decent enough premise to get me to go from point to point. And so I'm definitely looking forward to this. It seems that I'm the only one. Andrew has turned off this podcast because I said nice things about the trailer. And Douglas is busy playing with his computer.
Yes, he is.
I'm too busy learning magic.
It's something unattainable that you can't live without.
Seven reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death. I only have one question.
Why not stay dead?
There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
I'm your new quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Also PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
Q.
007.
No. Let's all get into this conversation. Mm-hmm. Because there are three movies that we have watched. All of us that we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I'm done talking about bad movies for right this second.
Forever.
So, no, not forever, because we have some bad movies to talk about. But what I want all three of us to speak on, in no particular order, are two movies that I know all three of us have finally now all watched. Mm-hmm. One is Skyfall, the latest 007 installment. Mm-hmm. And two is The Master, the latest crazy-ass man installment. So, go! What are we going to talk about?
I think we should talk about 007 first, because I think that's a easier discussion to have. Skyfall is the second best 007 movie to ever be made.
And what's the best one, by the way?
We don't have to have that conversation.
I'm just asking so that I have the scale right on my head, so Casino I know how Royale, wrong you are. Sir.
Casino Royale is the best James Bond movie to ever be made. It's so good, they should probably take James Bond off the title of that movie. And this is only the second time that a James Bond movie has been made so well and told such a good story that even without the James Bond moniker, it could hang by itself.
What?
Skyfall is probably the most personal James Bond has ever been. It tells a story about him. It's not just him being this, you know, super spy person. They really go in detail to what made James Bond into James Bond, and for that they had to shoot him, but you know that from the trailer. He had to die and come back. But what is truly exceptional about this James Bond movie, and the only other great James Bond movie, is that the villains are at the heart of what makes those movies great. James Bond is a spy, and if he doesn't have someone to equal him, then the movie kind of falls apart. And it happened a lot in older James Bonds, and especially Quantum of Solace. For the first half of the movie, he wasn't really fighting a person. And by the time they gave us an actual villain, the villain didn't really live up to what someone... You have to be a great villain in order for James Bond to hunt you down, right? If you're a mediocre villain, it just feels... There's a mismatch there, and it doesn't feel like the stakes are high enough for James Bond. You know James Bond is going to win in the end. You just want to see him be put through this situation and to see how he makes his way to the end. Skyfall serves as a transition from what James Bond used to be to what James Bond is going to be going forward. And at the end of the movie, I kind of felt sad for the people who are doing the Jason Bourne franchise, because it is clear that Jason Bourne is being usurped by James Bond. Which is funny, because when the Bourne movies came out at first, everybody's like, yeah, Bond needs to be more of that and less of Pierce Brosnan. And it has gotten to the point where he's no more Bourne than Bourne. And he's still James Bond, so he's get the best of both worlds. And the performances, having Ralph Fiennes in a movie is kind of unfair. What they did with him is just so good, and like everybody in all the characters that you saw and you wondered, you know, how it was going to work. All of it works out so well. Money Penny.
Wishaw was a great Q.
So my good.
Goodness.
So having young Q and having it be him, fantastic. A gun and a radio.
And then no, it was great. They made so many jabs at the old James Bond. They were like, what do you think if we don't do exploding pens, what do you think we are?
We don't go in for that sort anymore. I'm like, Thank you.
Thank you.
And he said something while he was going out, and I can't remember what it was, but it was hilarious. I mean, he
tried to bring back all the equipment in one piece.
Yeah.
Like, what equipment? They've given him two things:
the gun and the radio. And yet, Bond manages to lose a gun. Yeah.
Shocking.
Is it weird that I always thought that gun seemed impractical? Like, the idea, and they've had it before in Bond movies. They had it in License to Kill, the hand-activated gun, the hand-printed gun. But the fact that even when you see him use it for the first time in the movie in Shanghai, you see him, he's like, oh, I have to take off my glove and use it. Like, if he was in a heat of the moment there with his gloves on, he'd be screwed.
You know that gun actually exists, right? You know, that is not Bond technology. That is actual technology.
That seems realistic technology.
Over the world have had to have used, because the last thing you want is for some terrorist to kill your soldier and then have zillions of dollars worth of equipment at their disposal. So, yeah. I mean, I've heard arguments as to why this one is better than Casino Royale, but Casino Royale will always hold a special place for me because it was the first one that made Bond into a person. He wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And your first cartoon time is character. Always special, right?
Yeah, of course.
No, my first time was pretty terrible. Oh, you mean Bond? Oh, never mind. Never mind anything I just said. Yes. Yeah. This Casino Royale just changed the entire game. Just having new Bond, new everything. Just having him be this person that got beat up. Plus, Casino Royale had the scene where the guy was playing with his balls. And that line that came out of James Bond mode was the greatest. I say, yo, how are you going to feel when everybody knows that you're tickling my balls? And like, there's no way anybody's that gangster. There's nobody hit me in the balls and I find time to be funny. Only James Bond can do
that. I always think more of him shouting, to the left more, to the left.
Yes. Exactly. Oh, I mean, you can't be making jokes at a time like that. I was cringing, it wasn't happening to me.
You're like, the code is, leave me alone.
But just give him it's not worth it.
I love Skyfall, guys, and I think while it has all of the elements that make a Bond film great, what made it that much better for me was that personally it's the sexiest looking Bond film we've ever seen. The whole first hour, especially in Shanghai, it's just gorgeous. Like, I'm probably going to watch that movie at least two more times before it's out of theaters.
I've seen it twice.
And like, as I said, in Shanghai, that first time we see him when he's coming up on the sniper, and we have that silhouette fight scene, and then to add to the imagery is that it kind of shutters in light as the sniper is letting off rounds while they're fighting, so you just see these glimmers of light during the fight. It's just brilliant. You talked about acting. That's obviously there, as well as the villain themselves. But what I found,
Javier Bardem won't win anything for that performance.
Well, because he's won it already for No Country.
Right? He's not winning shit. And that performance is magnificent.
What I found really interesting was when we got to the later half of the movie. It kind of brought up all of the history of Bond a bit. Not so much the history of the character, but like the Bond we know. All of those gadgets, even the car.
Listen to me, guys. The first time I saw that car, tears came to my eyes. I was so happy to see DB5 in that movie. Because I didn't know. And I'm glad that everybody kept that secret.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. And then when they, of course, they destroyed the car.
Well, I wasn't going to go there.
To annoy me. just having that in there is like a thank you for the people who've been watching Bond for all these years. Like, look, we're moving ahead, but this is for you guys. it was magic. That is, I mean, to know that 50 years of James Bond movies could be encapsulated in one vehicle is kind of tremendous. And it takes a great director to know enough to put that in there. If we had a lesser director, he'd have just barreled through all of this shit, and it might have still come out good, but not this good. This, you can see directorial flourishes all over this movie. His fingerprints is, I mean, Mendes is so, he's so good, and to think he was able to do this much with a character like Bond isn't multi-dimensional. At least he wasn't for a long time.
No, he wasn't.
He is sexy and he murders.
That's about it. Yeah, it doesn't get much more than that. And I think what was so very different with this movie than a lot of the others had to do with the villain. And it was the fact that the villain in this movie wasn't a villain in the traditional sense of a Bond movie. In most Bond movies, the villain wants to take over the world.
I'd be so rich, yeah, it doesn't make any
something
sense.
Something along those lines. It's essentially villains of excess. That's what we've been used to. And this
power.
One, while he appears to be that in some respects,
in the beginning it felt like that is what his aim was.
Exactly. You realize that really and truly it's a very personal vendetta that this person is acting out or acting upon. And it's... that is something... I was actually, to some extent, I'm a little disappointed in that. But that's just the part of me that loves that campy James Bond.
Right.
That just, who cares if the movie's good? Just just make shit blow up, kind of James Bond. And the part of me that, you know, just watches French films.
Right. That appreciates movies.
Love that about this. That this is just, it was so particular. And actually, and I don't know how spoiler-ish this will be, but
the movie has made zillions. Everybody has seen it.
But also, even the way that Bond fought this villain was completely new. It was not... as you know, Ben Whishaw or Q said, it wasn't exploding pens and whatever. It was actually
self-driving cars.
It was literally one-on-one, even with all of the distractions that they had, the booby traps and whatnot.
I like them taking inspiration from Home Alone.
Personal. It was. Yeah.
Is it weird that when that came around, sorry.
What did you just say?
We were trying to listen to you.
The first thing that came to mind when I saw that come up, the whole end sequence, and as you call it, the Home Alone moments, is that I was thinking, I've seen that on Burn Notice.
But yeah, I mean,
when you're a spy,
I think I think that part though, that whole end sequence, the Home Alone sequence, was essentially it was a much more orchestrated and larger scale thing, but it was really just a fist fight between James Bond and Javier Bardem. That was it.
Right, and it was them kissing the 50 years of history goodbye. They're like, we're no longer doing any
of
that.
Well, no, actually, I don't know. I mean, every time I say this and then they push the envelope a little further, so I could easily be wrong, and I probably am wrong on this, but this feels, again, like the last one before they go back. It feels like they finally set up the campy James Bond that we know, and it's time to get back to the basics. That's what it feels like for me. And I've heard you said something very similar, you know, that they finally explained why James Bond became what he was in all of these movies. So I could easily see, while I think they're still going to try and keep the quality, I could easily see them going back to, you know, a lot of My Name Is Bond, James Bond, and Shaken Not Stirred, and
I don't see them going down that road because of how much money this one made. I think after Casino Royale, they kind of went down that road in Quantum, because that movie started out and it was just car scenes and gunfights and all sorts of nonsense, and they blow up buildings in the desert. Crazy, crazy shit happened in that movie. And there wasn't a lot of backlash, but there was enough backlash for them to pump the brakes on Bond 23.
Pump the brakes on Bond 23. MGM went bankrupt.
Right.
And couldn't afford Bond 23.
And Sony came in and Sony went, we need to rush this out before. And then they took a step back and went, I don't know who said it, but they said, we need to rewrite that script, because they had to rewrite the entire James Bond 23 script.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they got Sam Mendes off two separate projects to direct this movie. They said, you are directing this and we don't care what.
Can I tell you, when MGM went bust, I was so upset, because I knew immediately Sam Mendes was gone, but they managed to keep him somehow.
Look here, we don't want to hear anything. You're directing this and it worked. And they've set up all the new people for the Bonds going forward, which again was, I mean, just fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like they looked at all the Bond movies and they went, we need to move forward, but we have to give the people who have been with us for the 50 years some kind of send up. You know, they have to know that Bond is going to change, but not the good parts of Bond. We're going to change him. It's not in a way that you're going to hate. And I loved every, there's a few things that I didn't, just like nitpicks that I have, where I kind of throw away, like the guy goes into the Shanghai building and kills two guards and no one else. Where's the rest of guards, guys? He shot two guards in the middle of the place. And who is in the command tower? There's no other guards anywhere. But those are things that, you know, I see, but a lot of other people didn't see. And it's not important to what is happening. And also,
it could be argued that that was really an abandoned building. And all sorts of foolishness.
Yeah, but the amount of light that was in that building. Yeah. But that is little nitpicks that are throwaway. That doesn't have any bearing on the quality of the movie. It's just silly things that people will point out. I'd love to be able to talk about the end of the movie, because that is where everything culminates. And I mean, from top to bottom, you can see that a lot of time, a lot of effort. There is nothing cynical about this Bond movie. And I think that's what I like the most. That they appreciated past Bond movies, but they know they're going forward in a slightly different direction, but they're not going, you know, all these Bond movies are utter shit, so we're just abandoning them. No, they kept it and they said, this is the car, this is where Bond began, and fantastic, just unbelievable that they were able to do this. I expected a lot from the movie, but not this.
I didn't expect this from
our James Bond movie. Not again.
By the way, who wants to comment on the rumors that Idris Elba is the next Bond?
I doubt that very much, since they've signed what's his face to two more Bond movies.
They really signed him? Really?
Yeah.
What?
That was just the internet doing what the internet does, just like them shouting Donald Glover should be Spider-Man.
That's true. But then again, they did, Pierce Brosnan was supposed to sign things.
Tom Hardy was going to be the next one.
That would actually be...
No.
I would like
Tom Hardy. He does not fit that physique at all.
Whatever. Tom Hardy can fit any physique you want him to fit.
I doubt it at this one.
but honestly, I think, and I know that we've had old Bonds before and we'll continue to have old Bonds. I think he's getting a little bit rough around the edges for James Bond.
He looks like the years have been unkind.
Yeah, he does not. He doesn't look like he can take too many more of those.
But that's what you want. You want somebody that is not a superhero.
No, I agree, when they replace him. But he's in this movie when for example, when Naomi Harris was shaving him, and whenever you see his face, he looks like he's about 50 or 50 something years old. He looks very old. Like, yes, Bond traditionally has been like late 30s, early 40s, about there. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got.
Did you see Roger Moore?
Thank you. I was about to talk about Roger Moore.
Roger Moore looks like your grandfather playing Bond.
Yeah, but
they kept him a little bit.
They did, but also at the time that was kind of the look, right? So if you look at a lot of what people thought was sexy in that time, it was Roger Moore and people that looked like Roger Moore. Even Sean Connery. If you look at Sean Connery, he was always very
bloated.
Not quite muscular.
Don't you dare say anything bad about my Sean Connery.
He was fat.
he is the best Bond.
You are so wrong. It's not even funny. Daniel Craig, it's not even a competition. Daniel Craig has been in two great movies, and the rest of them have been in Bond movies. So Daniel Craig, by default, is the best Bond.
There's something to that argument. But no, I really like Daniel Craig, and personally, if I watched another two or three or four more Daniel Craig Bond movies, I'd be fine with it. But it just, you know, he's getting a little old.
I don't want superhero Bond to come back.
But also, I don't want Grandpa Bond to come back.
No, I don't. I mean, Daniel Craig doesn't look like a grandfather. But I hope they beat the hell out of him in future Bond. I want him to be hurt. I don't want him to just be strolling through, gunning down 9 million people. No one wants that. And clearly, they're moving.
Well, it looks that way. I mean, they allowed Bond to get shot in this movie. They allowed him to get very hurt, and that usually doesn't happen very at all.
I think he killed, before that end scene, I think he killed about 10 people in this movie, which must be an all-time low movie. The only time he murdered anybody was in the two shootout scenes that they had.
Yeah.
James Bond is a normal person. Normal-ish. He's still James Bond.
Yes, he is. And the end of this movie was great. And let's
move on. You have a break coming?
10 minutes.
If the average civilian had been through the same stresses that you have been through, undoubtedly, they too would have developed the same nervous condition.
You must understand. You want to get the lady back.
How did I get down here?
You're acting aggressive because you drank too much alcohol.
What do you do?
I am a writer, a doctor, a nuclear physicist, a theoretical philosopher. But above all, I am a man, just like you.
Right. Now, Douglas and I went to watch The Master, and Douglas and I alone saw The Master.
I'll send you the pictures, Andrew.
It was just us two and the usher inside the movie. When I went in the movie, the usher said, "Oh, he's the second person up there." And I heard that, and it was only after I went into the theater I realized that, oh, she wasn't joking. Douglas was sitting there, and then it was the two of us, which was really sad, because now I know why Carib doesn't bring these type of movies. It's because when they do, me and Douglas will be the only person who watch these movies, and you can't run a business like that.
That's why I've always supported the idea of bring out those movies, but bring them out for two nights only.
Right.
And tell people.
The usher said something which I found hilarious. She said that there's times when after intermission, they come in and there's no one in the theater, and so they shut down the movie. Which means they play the movie for about an hour before determining that maybe we should shut this off, because nobody. They have the ticket numbers 10 minutes after the movie started, and they look at how many tickets have been sold to that, for that movie, and they say zero. Why not shut it down then? I don't wanna. No, even if someone comes and wanted to see it, you're already 10 minutes late. You'll have to watch something else. It's very simple. But Carib,
because the master has to talk to somebody.
Carib is Carib. Douglas was sad at the end of the movie because he is afraid that Joaquin Phoenix won't win Best Actor because Daniel Day-Lewis
is in another
movie. What Douglas has forgotten is that the Oscar never goes to the best performance. It goes to what they deem the most deserving person. Daniel Day-Lewis already has an Oscar.
He has two.
Yes.
He has two.
Which is why he won't win this one. They'll give it to Joaquin Phoenix.
Alright, Damien. Damien.
Yes.
Let's just throw into the mix the fuck you that Joaquin put up to the world with I'm Not Here, or whatever that movie is called.
Right.
I wasn't there. I can't remember the name of the movie. And what he did to, like, even the press tours of the film he did before that, Two Lovers, which...
Oh, yes, right.
To know, I still haven't seen. And that's the part which pissed off a lot of people, is not so much that he did this experiment and how it turned out. It's how he did the experiment while using the press tour of his previous film.
No, I remember. I remember all of that, but... I'm sure when the discussions are being had, they're going to go. One man has two Oscars, and the other one does not have one. We should probably give it to the guy that doesn't have one. That they've been doing that for years now. Meryl Streep has won Oscars when she clearly didn't deserve it, and has lost them when she clearly did. So it wouldn't be the first for them. But the discussion we're having now is the wrong discussion to have. The Master, Andrew saw months ago because he's an asshole. Me and Douglas saw quite recently. The Master is a loose story about the Scientology movement. And the Master is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. He is called the Master throughout the movie. Which is good. I was worried that there was going to be something cryptic about the title, but it is not. He's the Master. He's referred to as the Master. And Joaquin Phoenix plays a drunk scoundrel who... He is the very best of those two things. He's the best drunk because he makes the best liquor. And he's the best scoundrel because he has no scruples about sleeping with women. There's a point in the movie where he writes on a piece of paper, "Do you want to fuck?" and puts a smiley face on it. And that kind of encapsulates his attitude towards life and all the other people he comes in contact with. And the movie is, in terms of acting, is remarkable. Both performances, both from Phoenix and Hoffman, are just... They're magnificent. There's points in the movie where just the expressions on Phoenix's face tells you so much about what he's thinking and, you know, what he wants and what he doesn't want. It's just so... It's so good. And then the story that they tell isn't, you know, some great grand story, but it is told so well. And it is just, the movie at no point felt like a chore to watch. It didn't drag at any point. The movie just flowed from point to point.
And you know what? That is something that's really significant when you really look at how the movie plays out. It really is two people going back and forth monologuing. That is what this movie really is. And for you to actually sit there and not only tolerate it, but enjoy that. Just two actors talking essentially either to each other or to nobody. It's phenomenal.
The movie starts at a point and ends at a point. In the middle of that, nothing really happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Anderson found a way, because I think he wrote this, right? Yeah.
Yes, he did. He did.
He found a way to just keep you, your eyes glued to the screen, and the writing is... Yeah, there's so much wit, and you know, it feels like these things actually happen. There's no way they did happen like this, but it feels so right. Yep. Everything that happened in the movie.
Apparently, this is a very loose story, and it's not really based off Scientology, which is what Andrew told us before.
No, that's what everybody read into the movie.
It's, I mean, I guess in a sense, it's clearly
going off interviews from Anderson. It's based off the idea of Scientology. It has no grounding in the actual history of Scientology, but it's more ruminating on the thoughts of the creation of cult.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's kind of cultish, is what this thing is, and also apparently it melds stories from another actor that Paul Anderson,
mm-hmm.
Paul Thomas Anderson, PTA, worked with on Magnolia from his Navy days, and also. Stories of John Steinbeck, the writer. Apparently, he was a crazy person as well. But it's all of those things. And what I find funny, I was just looking at the Wikipedia page. Apparently, some of or a few of the scenes, a few of some pieces of this movie, actually came from early drafts of There Will Be Blood. And I don't know how you can link those two movies, but they don't.
I don't want to try. They
like each other. But this movie is fantastic. I mean, it really just follows around, as you said, this guy, Freddie Quills, or whatever his name is, that's Joaquin Phoenix. And he does... This is really a forum for two fantastic actors to display their chops. And they do. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix do that to, you know... a fault.
Yeah,
I think.
Highest degree.
I mean,
Nazi better acting like this
anyway. Clearly is begging forgiveness at this point. please put me in your movie. This is how good I can act. I think that's what this was for him. And
the guy that you saw in 8mm, did you ever think he'd be this good at acting?
Wow. No.
There's just no way. There's no way to see it in person.
Joaquin Phoenix has become...
He's really good.
Great.
He is... Holy shit.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, I think, even before we get to this movie, when you see him do something as stupid and horrendous as... What was the name? I'll Be There or I Am Here or something like that. I can't remember. No, I honestly cannot remember the name of the movie. But whatever it was, when you see something as horrendous as that, you know that guy's probably a genius. Because...
Right, this is the other side of the coin.
Yeah, this is the other side of the coin, exactly. You know, he just didn't quite pull off something. Or he pulled it off in his mind, and only in his mind is it understandable.
He can see the genius, but no one else can.
The weirdest part is with that movie, the only thing that I really want to praise it for is the fact that he was willing, in this day and age of the transparency that people live in, that he was able to let people really think, this is really happening. Yeah, I'm really going batshit insane today.
Lost.
I'm going to have a rap career and it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a rap.
But this movie is fantastic, and the more you think about it, is the more there is to love about this movie. And I kind of want to now go and watch it again.
We have like a day.
No, we don't even have a day. What day is today? Tuesday? Yeah. Tomorrow, Breaking Dawn comes out. That shit is gone.
Yeah. So it's all over. If we leave now, could probably
make the 8:30 movie, yes.
Before they shut
Andrew,
it off.
Andrew, good night.
Before they shut it off.
What is this shit about starting movies at 4 o'clock? I don't...
It's a long movie.
I think that's why.
Yeah, no, but they were also starting Skyfall at that time.
Because they wanted extra movies for Skyfall.
I don't care. You can't start a movie. Push back the 8 o'clock movie.
They don't want... You know they don't want to do that because that means people are down there later.
If I leave work at 5, how in God's name am I going to make it to this movie?
Yeah, and you wonder why they don't have matinee showings ever.
That's stupid.
Yeah, it's because they're the worst. Andrew, you didn't really get a chance to talk about The Master. You reviewed it, but refused to listen to anything you had to say. Tell us now. I mean, we know you love it, and we could go read the review, but reading is too hard. can you tell me your thoughts on this movie, please?
Well, there are stages, because initially it's like what I felt when I first walked out of the theater, and I guess it was a poor decision on my part, and this isn't really a slight on the movie, on the other movie I'm going to mention, a poor decision on my part to end TIFF with a double feature of The Master and To the Wonder, the new Terrence Malick film. Mm-hmm. Because moving away from The Master when it's over to walk into another movie like half an hour later really wasn't the best choice. Like, I really should have spent a lot more time thinking about the movie. But immediately watching the film, other than a lot of the things you guys mentioned, was just the feeling of being hypnotized, which is one thing that I get whenever I watch any film by Paul Thomas Anderson. It's amazing that no matter how slow, how like, if we were to try and describe this movie to people, they'd be falling asleep. Kind of a film Paul Thomas Anderson decides to make, it's still, you almost get lost trying to figure out the points where scenes change from A to B, because you're just so engaged by what's being presented to you and how it's being presented visually and orally as as we go moment to moment with character to character transitions and meditations. But I went through this period for around a month after when the film came out publicly, and everyone and their grandmother went out to see this film, at least everyone that is, that's important, you know, the people who actually like movies. And I started to read a lot of reviews and listen to a lot of podcasts and get a lot more perspectives on the film, and to date I still haven't had the opportunity to revisit the movie, which is something I deeply regret. Or at least I guess I can't really regret it, because I just haven't had the chance, but you know, I wish I could have. And what I love most is the people who have theorized, come up with this idea that it's not just about the master in the sense of the master of this religion or this cult, but the master of your being. Philip Seymour Hoffman is like a owner of a dog who is Freddy Quells, who is trying to give this path to, but now you're talking about an individual who, while he thinks he wants a master, he wants someone to guide him, because he definitely has figured out that while he doesn't take shit from anybody, he can't go on like this anymore. And that's what I love so much about that final scene, and why I make that mention to Douglas on Twitter last night about the slow boat to China. Because in that final scene where they're coming together and he says something, if I remember correctly, to the effect of, if you leave here now, and we ever meet again, we will be enemies in our next lives, you know, and such. And it's the master trying to give definition to his life by thinking that helping this man will do that, and it's the man trying to find definition by allowing someone else to guide him. And that kind of stuff, I'm just dying to see this movie again, guys. It is a fantastic film, and I'm happy to hear you guys love it as much as I did.
Sweet.
You guys still awake?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And I really did love that Philip Seymour Hoffman kind of fluctuated between treating Freddy as either a child or a dog. That was very fun.
Freddy, stop.
Sit.
All right, so this has been the Unnamed Movie Podcast. You can find us on the internet. Okay, and good night.
Oh, man.
You can find Andrew at G-Man Reviews. he and only he writes for that website because we two are too lazy. It's not busy because we're doing the shit when we come home. we don't care work with us. So I don't know what our excuse is. You can find me on Twitter. I think I've up to 9 tweets at this point, somewhere for, and I've been on it for about 7 months. So I'm keeping up my quota of not being on any social network. You can find Andrew on Twitter at Gman Reviews because, of course. You can find Douglas on Twitter at DJR lost his name. He's also on Facebook. Andrew's on Facebook. We're all on Google Plus, but no one uses that except people who are talking about Google shit. And photography. If you need to know about photography, Google Plus is the place that you need to sign up to. We're all also in fantasy football. That's fantasy.premierleague.com, where Damian White Damian White is something. It starts with W and ends with inning. It's a cricket term, inning. So yeah, you can read Andrew's writings on Gman Reviews. I promised myself, I haven't told Andrew this yet, but I promised myself to write at least some reviews and articles for his website. Next year is part of my resolutions. I've actually written some things that I have not sent him yet. So next year, if the Mayans are incorrect, I will have things on the Gman Reviews website. I expect that Douglas will do nothing of the sort.
Damian, why did you kill Fellini? He was scoring so many points and then you bought him.
Yes. And then he got himself more yellow cards than anybody should, and now he's banned.
It's all your fault.
Probably. As long as I get the same amount of points from the players as you do, I'll stay in the lead. If only there was a way to hack into Andrew's computer and see who he has on his team. Because that way I'd stay ahead of you by default. I just have your
I'm just
players.
Pissed that I didn't follow my gut and Captain Silva this week.
I'd probably still found a way to beat you. So this has been The Tump. Enjoy your weeks. And please don't watch bad movies. Can we outro every podcast going forward by demanding that people don't watch shitty movies? Please. Guys, you know it's bad. In fact, Douglas just had one on the screen. Lay Your Favorite. It stars Bruce Willis. It has a 5.7 on IMDb. Don't watch it.
And all at once I knew
save
it once.
Yourself.
I knew he
all right, thanks for listening.
Me.
And good night.
Until the day I die, I wanna want.